Am I man enough to do this, whatever it is? Am I man enough to be a man? People think that being a man is about not being vulnerable. I disagree. To be vulnerable means you understand your capabilities and you also understand where you can improve. If I just knew how to do that, my career might have lasted a bit longer and I might not have gone through as much heartache.
I never really thought that had ever happened to me. And it genuinely was on the show where I thought, can't do it. Mentally, I was like, I'm done. Welcome to Man Made with me, Pete Wicks. Today we have a friend of mine and an all-round great guy. Big scary guy, but great guy. It's Jason Fox. He has had such a incredible kind of life, lived many lives, I would say, from being in the military to then being on TV. He's currently or going to be on tour from March 10th. There's still tickets available, Embrace the Chaos. We'll be talking about kind of parts of his story and what it is to kind of find a purpose in life. He is genuinely a really lovely guy who I find really, really relatable for lots of different people. And for me, when we talk about male role models and not being able to find many, or there's not many male role models for people to look up to, I would say Foxy would be a role model for me. What is your relationship with masculinity like?
My relation, like, I think the word masculinity has been I'm going to use wrong words here, but misportrayed sometimes. Yeah. I think for me, it's changed over the years because my life has spanned, I think, generational change to a certain degree. I grew up in the 80s and the 90s, which is a different time to what we're in now.
Yeah.
Different things were acceptable, rightly or wrongly. That's the way it is. But I think what people have found confusing is there's been this word, two words that make up a thing called toxic masculinity. Yeah. So when without any explanation, people think, oh, that just means being a bloke's fucking toxic and shit. And yeah. So that's where I think we've started to have an issue with understanding what a man should be and what a man shouldn't be. I think I've said this before, but I think it can be summed up easier. It's basically, and this is like where you will tell me to not swear and probably use a different word, but don't be a cunt is a way of saying that it's essentially, that's what toxic masculinity is. Yeah. Is if you are thinking that your actions are going to have a negative impact on yourself, people around you, you know, anyone in particular, there's a good chance you probably shouldn't do that action or say that thing.
We kind of do it, you know, the pod being called Man Made, it's not specifically for men. A lot of what we talk about is really fundamentally about being a good person, regardless of kind of gender, age or anything else. It's knowing the difference between right and wrong and the impact of your own actions. And I think, you know, that is the way you kind of said it there about, you know, toxic masculinity is it's almost like it's bad and it's wrong to be a man because it's kind of used so much, isn't it? And I don't think anyone really knows what the fuck they're saying when they use it sometimes, you know what I mean? No. And it fundamentally does come down to just, yeah, don't be a cunt. I love that. It's probably the easiest way to do it. I mean, you stereotypically, if people were going to look at you from the outside, you are like the man's man. You know what I mean? Like background, it's one of them. Like, you know, men would look up to you and be like, that's a proper man. Because generationally, you kind of hold a lot of the traits that we would say are stereotypical of what a man is. Protective, strong. I mean, the whole military environment, everything is kind of, that is a man's man. Is that what it was like for you kind of growing up? Is your perception of being a man different now to what it was when you were growing up?
No. And the reason I say that, I've had to think about this a lot recently. It's not like my family or anywhere I went taught me how to be a man, but I was influenced by example. And my old man he's a good guy. He's still a good guy. He's got things wrong. I've got things wrong. But I think I took a lot from him, and I've been very lucky in having people of influence near me who are good people. I I've somehow managed to sort of, I've got in with the wrong crowd every now and again, and mm-hmm. and thankfully it's not been too catastrophic, and I've been able to somehow through some form of intuition realize that I need to maybe step away from certain things, and I have come close to really having a catastrophic moment, whether it's getting in with the wrong crowd and behaving in a way that is not good, you know. And when I say that, I'm talking about going out drinking as a youngster and getting into fights and shit like that. And so it's not that my perception of it or my understanding of it has changed, but it has become more informed and maybe not, more informed, but also I'm more conscious of what it is that's going on and what I'm actually should and shouldn't be doing. Whereas in the past, I've just been lucky that it's the way the cookie crumbled.
Because you're so open now and you've spoken so much about men's mental health, I mean, you know, the way you speak, like I said, I think it resonates and relates to a lot of men because it's not waffle. You get to the kind of point of it, which I think is really important because men's mental health, we talk about all the time, but not many kind of people listen. So many people talk about it, but there's never really a kind of overarching point to the conversation sometimes. When you were younger, did you talk about kind of emotions and how you felt, or is that something that has happened kind of later in life?
It's like when you said then earlier, oh, you're people's perception of what a man is. I'm like, really? I'm still fucking... I'm a lot more confident now. I'm older now.
Yeah.
But when I was like, you know, a young lad, when I was in the Marines, I was a trained soldier and I was still like fully underconfident, you know, worried about whether I was an imposter, you know, the imposter syndrome, all this. And that's after having been through, you know, years of training in that. And it's weird how I don't feel like that now. Maybe that is an age thing, but no, it's, you know, I haven't always... It's been a struggle the whole time being a growing up, being a lad, trying to work out who you are, where you're going.
What sort of things did you struggle with then? You know, because
am I good enough for a start?
Really?
Am I good enough? Am I man enough to do this, whatever it is? Am I man enough to be a man? You know, you look at pictures of me when people used to ask me, oh, what do you do as a job? Thinking I was still at school or something. I'll be like, oh, I'm in the Marines. They're like, fuck off, mate. Do your mum know you're in? I'm like, for years, I looked like super young. And then obviously something happened and I just went from being super young to just old. I never had no fucking happy medium.
I mean, the military is, I think that's why when I say people would look at you and go, that is like a proper man. It's based on the fact, you're a trained soldier. All the kind of fundamental strong elements that people would associate with being a man is what you would expect from someone who is, you know, a Marine, an elite soldier. Like you kind of look at that and go, fucking hell, that's a bloke. Behind all of that, you're in an environment full of people where you would assume that was the case, got the shit together, super confident. You never would imagine there's imposter syndrome or any of those sort of things happening when you are performing at such a high level. How difficult is that?
I think so. Like, look, people are different and, you know, I'm not going to speak for everyone, but I think everyone is always worried about, are they good enough?
Mm.
Even in that job, you're always striving to be the best version of you so you can... So you're picked, so people think you're a reliable person. You're obviously reliable because you're in the job, but you're one decision away from fucking up.
Yeah.
And you don't want to do that because obviously sometimes the consequences are
fucking up
astronomical. But so there's always that. There's always stress and pressure that comes with being in that environment. Sometimes you would be less vulnerable than I think you should be. From my experience from a few years ago when I served, I was uncomfortable with being vulnerable and talking about how I might have been feeling. And it's funny because there was the guys that I work with are the most, they've got so much empathy, which is mad. And we all look out for each other and we'll talk about we'll talk about the things that are going on in our lives, but we won't really talk about how we feel about it.
Mm.
It'll just be, there'll be
matter of fact.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be like, oh, this has happened in my personal life. And you'll be like, oh mate, that's tough. But you won't dig into how you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, how do you actually, are you all right with this? We're going out soon on a job, but you don't do that. You just, there's a level of understanding. So it's not as alpha as everyone thinks. It is alpha. It's, you know, there's still bravado and stuff like that, but healthy bravado, not unhealthy. But there's still, you know, if people were being honest, there's still, you're still human. You're still a bloke that's just like wanting to be accepted, wanting to be good, wanting to be the best at your job.
Mm.
Which adds pressure, and you know, you struggle sometimes with confidence issues. Something might have happened in your life, split up from your missus, and you got rejection stuff going on in your head and all that sort of stuff.
It's such a high pressure environment in terms of, yeah, you're going to have all them kind of personal things that everyone goes through, divorces, breakups, you know, losing people on the outside, whatever it may be. But the psychological side of what you actually do, leaving the forces, were you prepared for that kind of psychological shift of being in something for so long, being conditioned in that way, to then coming back to?
No, that's what tripped me up.
Yeah,
was me not accepting. So I, you know, I essentially get to the point where I'm leaving the military because I got medically discharged. And actually, if I'm putting my reason for being medically discharged is obviously mental health. That's what I talk about. But the reasons for it happening are probably down to poor decisions as a bloke. So I wouldn't have said toxic masculinity, but the inability to be a good person or in a family environment and communicate and support, that didn't happen from me. So I fucking dropped the ball, which in turn meant that the one thing that we as guys and girls and anyone else in life like should really gain support from, what is our rock is family and that. And I dropped the ball there by being vacant, not communicating, not being supportive, not understanding. So if we're talking about toxic masculinity, I was probably, I wouldn't go as far to say toxic, but I wasn't being a good bloke. Do you know what I mean? I was a great bloke at work. You could rely on me and I'll be there when the fucking bullets are flying and all this. But then when it came to fostering a good thing at home, you know, where I would be coming back and decompressing and being able to deal with all that stressful stuff, it was non-existent.
Have you kind of reflected on why you found that so difficult? How you can go, because the thing is, you know, and a lot of people will never understand, like I won't, but you know, being in the military, being in the forces, it's not a job, that's a life. It's not a job. Like, we can all go to kind of work and then you kind of retire after 40 years. Having that amount of time in that is a lifestyle. It's more than it is anything else. It's so consuming, surely, that the kind of pullback from that, it's...
Yeah, but it's all relative. It's like, you know, that was my decision. That's what I wanted to do. Other people's jobs are just as stressful and as, you know, all-consuming, because their future relies on it, you know, stability, cash, whatever. I think... It's funny because I, like, you asked me, you know, why was that? It's like the reason that I got everything else wrong is because I wasn't taught to do it. But that's a get out of jail free card as well, because I got mates that weren't taught it, but they got it right. They were able to strike a happy balance. We're all different.
Yeah.
They're good communicators. They screwed the nut, as we say, when it comes to like making bad decisions. You know, if I got offered to go, as a shitty example, go and watch a football game with my mates at a weekend instead of spending some quality time at home, I'd go and do that.
Yeah.
Which is out of order. And so why am I surprised when things started to start crumbling, when things started to crumble?
I mean, now that you've kind of had an opportunity to kind of look back on them things, and you're in a different kind of period of your life where you have... probably, I mean, did you reflect on like kind of mental health and things pre the last few years? Was it something that was kind of like during that time, like serving and everything? Was it something that was present in your head?
I didn't believe in, like, there's always stories about soldiers that are suffering. And obviously I'm going to be solely blinkered to my way of life, my career. So people talk about, oh, yeah, you've got guys that are suffering with PTSD and all this. And I'm like, that's a load of bullshit.
Hmm.
I was like, I've been doing this job for long enough in some pretty stressful environments and I'm fucking good to go. I think that's some fucking, obviously, you know, I am eating a massive slice of humble pie because then all of a sudden you're getting nipped in the ass by this thing that you said didn't exist, which is also the problem for me because when it does happen, I'm trying to fight it off and deny that it's going on, which in turn is compounding the issue.
I mean, I've just watched Arctic Adventure. I genuinely watched it.
Did you?
Yeah. Like, honestly, mate, listen, you know, without blowing smoke up your ass, I love anything you do. I think it's great. I find it fucking fascinating. And actually, it was really nice for me to watch you struggle a little bit after all the shit you put me through on SAS. It was quite nice. I
mean, dude, you came back twice.
I know. I guess,
hey, the glutton from that's the punishment. Just stupidity.
but no, it's amazing because I, doing this podcast and I said the same to Billy. I wrote a book off the back of SAS because of the reason I left the second time.
About being in the SAS.
You know more about it than I do,
to be fair.
I mean, I'm like, yeah, exactly. No, but off the back of doing the show because it was the letter thing that sent me fucking gone because it was the first time, because I didn't know we were going to really read him out. And it's the first time I put at the end of this letter, I'm fucking struggling. And I wrote saying to my mum about lots of stuff. And that really was what made me do the book, which has then led to this kind of pod. So it was a pivotal moment for me because it's the first time I'd ever said, fuck, I'm struggling outside of this. Mm. And I remember saying to you, it's not like I've got shit, I'm going to lose the plot.
Mm.
Because it was like a realization of fuck me, I've never said that. Because similarly to you, my mum had suffered mental health and stuff when I was young, but I never really thought that had ever happened to me.
Yeah,
I'd be fine. I was always fine. I'd be good as gold, masking things with alcohol and going out and being the kind of that guy, this guy. And it genuinely was on the show where I thought, oh, fuck, I can't do it. It's the first time I've really felt like not physically weak, because I'm not exactly a fucking, physically it's not the thing, but mentally I was like, I'm done.
Yeah.
And off the back of that, I still find doing these pods hard. I still find talking about that stuff hard. But the whole point of doing the book and the whole point of doing this is because it's relatable for so many men, and none of us really understands what we're supposed to do or how we're supposed to do it. And we're kind of muddling our way through it. But if you can take a little bit of relatability from someone else's situation and kind of reflect on yourself, then it's worthwhile. Mm. What was the kind of point for you where you started really looking inside yourself? Is there a turning point?
Yeah, I know when it is and I'll say it, but I do think it's always gradual, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's always a host of things that come before and then after that pit. So you say is pivotal.
Yeah.
Mine was like dipping into suicide, really.
Yeah.
And my world, as far as I was concerned, was falling apart. I'd lost the career that I loved. Again, I didn't think it was, I didn't understand why I'd lost it. And I found myself, you know, on a cliff. I've had a mental breakdown. I'm crying and all sorts. I had been crying. I wasn't by this stage. And that was the moment then I realized that I hadn't really taken it seriously. It had got to a point. Everything that was going on in my life was serious, but I wasn't really taking it seriously. I was bullshitting to myself about the fact that there was something that needed addressing, which in turn meant I wasn't engaging in anything that was there to help me because I was like, yeah, fuck off, whatever. And drinking, you know, leading a life that was fucking unsustainable.
So how do you come back from, you know, a dark place like that and the level of that kind of being as bad as it gets to the position that you're in now? And that's completely individual as well, you know. Mental health and how people cope with that is there's no one size fits all. What works for you won't work for everyone else. But how do you come back from that to the position that you are now?
You have to make some fucking decisions in life, I think. And actually, now we're talking about it, I always say it's about, I decided to be honest in that moment. But actually, we talk about don't be a cunt, you know. I was probably being a cunt to myself.
Yeah.
I was employing toxic masculinity internally and not not communicating with myself, not thinking about where I was and admitting to some things that should have been admitted to, and not being vulnerable. Like, people think that being a man is about not being vulnerable. I disagree. I think to be vulnerable means you understand your capabilities and you also understand where you can improve. If you're not vulnerable, you don't know how you can improve, and ultimately you're going to come into a, or come to a dead end, which is confusing and fucking scary, because it means there's no forward movement.
Yeah.
So I think that's what happened, to be fair, actually, looking back on it. The honesty thing is an easier way to sum it up, but I think in the end I made a decision not to be a twat to myself.
I mean, like I said, I watched Arctic Adventure and listened to you and you know, the other guys there. Everyone has their own kind of personal struggles, and the conversations you were having, it was very much it's uncomfortable to watch. Because you can see it's an uncomfortable position, but
yeah, it's uncomfortable to do.
Yeah, just what I mean, like it's quite uncomfortable. Instead of men, like, we, you know, if we see women talking about things, or even just men that are better communicators than a lot of us are, but watching those conversations that you four were having felt uncomfortable to watch. It looked uncomfortable to be in. And what we do as men is kind of veer away from them uncomfortable things, because you don't want to look like a fucking tit, really, a lot of the time. But how important do you think those sort of conversations are?
They're super important. They're like the only thing uncomfortable for me. I don't feel uncomfortable talking about it.
Do you not?
No. The only thing I felt uncomfortable on that was having a shit in the snow, to be fair.
That wasn't mine, by the way.
That was
more uncomfortable to watch than the conversations, I'm going to be honest with you.
I was surprised they left that in.
Hearing him describe it after, that was a lot as well. I didn't need the fucking rundown on it, do you know what I mean?
It was, I think it was different for all of us. I was told a while ago that I'd left the military, and someone was being super kind and said, come up to London and do a bit of network. And I didn't have a job at the time. I was told by this person, for fuck's sake, whatever you do, don't talk to any of these people about your, the person knew of my, my journey. Now, don't tell him you've had mental health issues, fucking hell. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, no worries. Okay, thinking that was it. That, you know, that's the thing that you do. You're not vulnerable, and ultimately that not being vulnerable was a thing that nearly fucking ended it for me. And so, you know, in that moment when I'm like on a cliff, I mean, this bit didn't happen right then, but it was the catalyst. I'm like, that's not fucking working for me. Like, this whole not admit, like, hiding shit is like stressful as fuck. Because what if someone does find out? So that was another thing that happened that was a byproduct of me not being an idiot to myself, was, you know, being vulnerable.
How important is kind of, it's a really sad statistic that a lot of men who are over 50 have no friends. Have you heard this? Because it becomes their wife's friends, it becomes everything else, and struggles to actually have real kind of friends. You come from the environment, brotherhood is a huge thing. Men being around each other, men struggle to talk to and have male friends in that way. You can go to the pub with someone, but, you know, I'm fortunate and unfortunate to have Sam, but like someone who is like a brother to me, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of people don't have that, and they don't necessarily have that person. It becomes their wife, who they might talk to about things or whatever else. But having that kind of man to man chat about things, we struggle with. Being in the military and that kind of brotherhood, coming out of that, how much did that affect you?
I mean, that's a fucking sad statistic. So when I left the military, I mean, I've always had fucking guys and mates, you know, people that I can actually, you know, regardless of what I said earlier, we still phoned each other up and like had a chat. We might not like I do now, where we dip in and actually be like, are you all right, mate?
You know?
But when I left, I was so embarrassed about the reasons I left. I disappeared for a little bit off the face of the earth. I dropped under the radar and I went and stayed with my partner and whatnot in a corner of the country where no one really bothered me. And I thought that was the thing that I needed to do, because I was trying to start a new life. I was trying to come to terms with not having a career that I absolutely loved. And also I was embarrassed. So I wanted to, you know, park it. And it was probably, again, there's many of them, but that was another thing that was fucking me up, was not having that connection to,
yeah,
to mates, to friends, to the people that actually understood me. Obviously, I then, when everything started, nearly came to a head and crumbling around me, I was like, fuck, I need my mates, and then reached back out. And they're like, hey, we've always been here. And, you know, then you suddenly realize the importance of that. And so when you talk about people that haven't got that, I find it sad.
Yeah.
And I find it devastating that there are people in that space, because I'm lucky. I actually nearly fucking threw it all away by not reaching out to people.
What is it about the fact that you can talk about this now, but what was the embarrassment? What were you embarrassed of?
Just the mental health thing about being...
Admitting
that I used to tell people that if I bumped into anyone, I am a hearing. I got medically discharged because I'm fucking deaf as a post.
Really?
Yeah, sort of deaf as a post, but, you know, I just played on that. And everyone knew, though. It's like everyone knew why I'd left. You know, it didn't take the fucking brains of an archbishop to work it out. But... are they clever? I don't know.
This is one of my favourite things. The one-liners, you never quite know where they're going, and they're always fucking great.
But
no one wants to argue. They go, I don't know. how did you come? I mean, are you still embarrassed a bit now?
Nah.
So where was the shift?
The shift was the show. For me, I think. Started talking about it amongst people that were coming to me after I'd initially started saying, I left because of this, and this, and went and spoke to a few people in the military about their journey and the fact that they were feeling off kilter, whatever you want to say. So that started it, and then did the first season. So we were filming the first season of SAS, and one of the guys that was a director, he was doing that, you know, the master interviews where you talk to camera. We did like hours and hours. We did a few hours before, and then I ended up doing a fucking massive chunk of them literally as we finished the shoot, and they said, oh, you've got to come into this hangar and just do the... We're there for like... And I was wanting to get on the piss with everyone else, and I'm like, fucking hell. We were having this chat, but we really got on. Still mates, not spoken to him for a while, but... We were just having a conversation, a great interview, because it was just a conversation, a bit like us. And he was like, we were talking about stuff, and he was like, why did you leave the military? And I was like, I'll tell you why I left the military. And I went into this thing, and he was like, and then that fucking hell annoyed me because it made the conversation go on longer. So I'm like, fuck, I wish I'd never said anything. We were talking, and he was like, oh, fucking hell, you know, and I explored it fully. And then he's like, mate, we're going to fucking use that. And I was like, oh, fucking hell. Okay, probably a good thing. I was really panicking about it. And then we build up to that episode. It was on episode 2 of the first season. And I knew it was coming out, this thing. And I was fucking a nightmare to be around. You know, short-tempered, moody, scared, anxious. Because on Channel 4, there was going to be this thing of me admitting that I got medically discharged from the special forces as a fucking bloke that's just spent the last episode gobbing off and telling everyone how fucking amazing he is. And there I am. And I was panicking about the fallout from it. And then it went out. I felt like a weight had been, the vulnerability thing suddenly, it was like an empowerment. I suddenly realized that I don't have to worry about this facade I've put up anymore. This fucking barrier of bullshit. It's out now, and if people don't like it, they don't like it. If they do, they do. And actually, the response that I got was good, and so that's when it all changed.
And what was
so the, like you? It was the TV show.
Yeah, fucking hell, Christ! We're
more similar than you think.
This is a glowing endorsement for fucking Say Sudez wins, isn't it?
I know. Yeah, fucking hell.
I mean, just to go, because a lot of what I spoke about in the book off the back of that, and a lot of things that kind of I was triggered by saying I'm struggling, was because I'd seen my mum struggle, and I'd seen my mum try and take her own life, and always thought, well, I'll never be that because I'll never put someone in a position to feel the way that I feel. I would never do that, so I'll always be fine. And that was never spoken about because my mum was never comfortable speaking about it. Again, embarrassed, and she still feels some of that embarrassment. She wants people to know that there is, you can come back from those sort of things. You know what I mean? And I think sense of duty is something that being in the military, you have military parents as well.
Yeah. Yeah, they were. Yeah.
Do you now feel a sense of duty to help men with mental health because you've got an experience that people can relate to and you've come a long way from being in such a dark place?
This comes down to, this actually comes down to purpose. Like, what's your purpose in life?
Yeah.
And there's different things that feed into what your purpose is. And I think what I get an awful lot from is helping others in an area that I'm comfortable being. Like, maybe some people are not comfortable with it, but I am. So I'm happy to lend, I don't know whether there's any advice, but at least a perspective on what might be useful and what might not be useful in the areas of mental health.
Mm.
And that is what I feel I get a lot from.
When you know, with the show, and you've got a tour coming up.
Yeah. I talk about that in the tour. That's why it sort of was a real nice little segue. Thanks, man. go on.
It's not my first rodeo. people will come and certainly, like, you know, I remember coming on the show the first time. What people didn't see off the back of that and in behind that is the conversations that I've had with you, the actual care for you guys as much as it show to actually bring the best out of people. And to actually help people. And I think there's a lot of people that have, you know, I've spoken to Ashley Kane and a lot of people that I've done the show with and seen who have said it had a major imprint on my life in terms of understanding being around people like you guys. And people don't necessarily see that on the show because they'll see the kind of the best bits and the, you know, the bits where you break your ribs and fall out of the helicopter or, do you know what I mean? Like the bit where we're getting beasted or shouted at. But what they don't see is the kind of 24 hours of actual care and the difference it makes to people.
Yeah, it's a shame that it can't be a film. It's a shame it can't be live streamed and people watch the whole thing in its entirety because I think that's where it gets... It's misunderstood, I think, that show, which is a good thing and a shame as well because it is entertainment, like you said. That's all that really matters.
It's a brilliant show for that. Like,
but it is about the thing that we're proudest, and I know I can talk on behalf of the other guys, is we're proud that we are there being a part of people's journey.
Mm.
It's about what you get out of it. And you see so many people get a lot out of it. Mm. Whether they feel like that at the time or not is a different thing. But we're really, really honoured to be able to do something like that, that we get to see people's journey and be a part of it.
So with like the tour, what sort of things do you speak about that? Because people are coming... I mean, I love you and you're a really nice fella, but I can't imagine it's comedy you're doing. So because of what you're going to, yeah, just alone. Is this a real fucking analogy or not? You should do one of them fucking things. Brains of an Archbishop or whatever it is.
That's what it's called. No, I'm joking.
Jesus. But what sort of things do you talk about? Because people will come expecting, I imagine, advice. They'll expect... Because that's what I think, Sam says it to me all the time. Or especially, you know, when I was first doing SE, he said, listen, if you ever want to know any just about anything, just ask Foxy, as if you were like the advice giving oracle of all things. Are people there?
He never listened to my fucking advice.
He doesn't listen to any of these. He's got too many voices in his own head to listen.
True.
But what do people expect from your kind of tour and what sort of people come to the tour?
It's not, I'm very, very reluctant to make it a fucking lecture on how you should do things. It's not that at all. It's basically this one, it's called Embrace the Chaos, but because fucking my life has been chaotic and most people's lives really have an element of chaos involved. I'm bringing to life a load of stories. Most of them are about fuck ups. There are funny things happening. There's some serious things happening. And it's about what I learn along the way. But ultimately, it is about finding purpose and a new way of living after having a reset, whatever that reset looks like. It could be like losing purpose or needing a new way to lead your life, that, you know, I needed to do both. And that's essentially what it's about. So I sort of explain how I did that, even though it was all by accident. I explain how it happened. Upon reflection, I've worked out what it was.
And then, because I imagine, you know, a lot of people come and find that very inspiring. And because you, I said this to Bitter, you guys are very inspiring to be around as people because of the way you talk and because you do what you say.
I think it's just because we're honest.
Yeah, and but most people aren't. So that is, when you see someone be honest about things, whether it's be right, wrong, good, bad, honest with themselves, because so many people are lying to themselves about who they are, what they are, how they feel. When you see people who you look up to speak honestly about those things, it does become inspiring because you think, fuck, if they can do it, I can. And I imagine, you know, you sharing your experiences and bringing that, you know, to life in the tour, reset, finding purpose, people will listen to your experiences and relate that to their own lives. Do you think, you know, knowing what you know now, if you had made earlier changes, spoken, understood mental health a little bit better, or your own mental health a little bit better, do you think you could have prevented the moment on the cliff?
I think I could have prevented fucking me leaving the military earlier.
Do you really?
Yeah, if I was just a bit more, if I knew that I could talk, if I'd learned the art of fucking, the funny thing is, you're in the military in a, you know, you're in an elite.
Yeah.
You know, unit of individuals. You learn how to communicate so well on all sorts of different levels. And then when it comes to the simple stuff like going home and communicating, you fucking shit. If I just knew how to do that, my career might have lasted a bit longer and I might not have gone through as much heartache. But that said, I probably wouldn't change anything other than the impact it had on other people.
So, I mean, you're constantly doing different things to continually push yourself, regardless of leaving the military. I mean, the Arctic Adventure is a prime example of that. Well, why the fuck you'd want to do that? I don't know.
I got fucking conned.
But you know what? It's the overall, if you watch it, it's the overriding thing is you're like, why the fuck am I doing that?
I ask myself that on a regular, on a daily basis. I think you said
it
at
the
end,
like, why the fuck am I doing that?
Yeah.
What was it about? How did that come about? What was the kind of purpose? Obviously, it was a challenge, but, and it was, you know, for part of the show, but the overriding,
the show was an add-on. It wasn't going to be.
Were you already doing it?
We were doing it anyway. Right. And so then they were like, oh, we want to film it. And I was like, I personally was like, no, I don't want to. I just want to fucking do something.
Yeah.
I'm doing something hard with the lads, but it became this thing. Because I knew the impact of what filming a TV show has on an event. Because the nature of the beast is it adds another layer of admin.
Didn't you feel like you sometimes, when you know things are being filmed as well and there's cameras there, you stop being as present because there's something else in the background? Do you know what I mean?
No, we were still able to be present because they weren't always there.
Yeah.
There was, you know, there was chunks of the day, pretty big chunks where it was just us.
Yeah, because it's an hour long, isn't it?
But yeah, yeah. I mean, that was 10 days of fucking hell. But the reason, so Woody, one of the lads, I've known him a long time. He does like expeditions and crazy shit in warm countries.
Yeah.
Primarily. I've always done stuff, mainly with Aldo, one of the other lads, in cold, wet conditions, and it's fucking boring and horrible. Mm. And so I was like, Woody, next time you've got something going on. Anyway, he phones me up and says, oh, I've got something going on. Do you want to be a part of it? And I was like, yeah, of course. It's going to be somewhere warm. And it was that shit. So, yeah, I was a bit, no. But jokes, that was a sort of half joke. But I thought when he asked me that this thing, Project, because it was called Project Fire and Ice, I thought it was four guys going to do an expedition, a hard bit of graft for charity.
Hmm.
What I didn't realise was the mechanism that was being used was a race. And I was like, oh, what, we're doing a race?
Hmm.
And that's when I was like, I'm not here to race anyone. I'm going to push myself. But so it added a different dynamic. to it. And
you can kind of see that in the show, can't you? Because it is Woody that was like, well,
Woody's an ultra, he's a marathon runner.
So he's there to
He run. He loves that shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, mate, I don't care about that shit. I'm here to be with you lot.
Yeah, you repeatedly said it throughout the thing that this is about us starting together, finishing together, and getting this done.
In the end, it actually worked out really well. It's good that we were pushed by a time because it did make it harder.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. But on the flip side, it did, like, we were slightly less present than I'd like to have been because of this fucking time limit.
Yeah.
If we were pushing for like a 10K less a day, we'd have been more present because we'd have been like, oh, look, that's nice. That's nice. I mean, do you know what I mean?
It was like, it's a really powerful kind of show, especially when you guys are talking about things, because you all have, you know, similarist backgrounds in terms of what you've done, but the struggles and the different things that each one of you talk about are all completely different.
Yeah.
I think, was it Aldo lost his sister?
Yeah, that was,
And then the way he speaks about that in the show.
But we didn't know, when we were doing that, we didn't know that that was going on because he's injured. Yeah. He was back, but he was like, the thing that got him out of it was he was listening to voice notes from his sister. We didn't know that. He didn't tell us that until way down the line.
But I mean, that's what's incredible about that. And that's why it's so powerful, is despite the fact that you've all got this kind of similar background, outside of that, everyone individually has their own struggles. And it was about you guys going away and being able to speak and listen to each other.
Yeah.
And we say it a lot on this pod, and you know, it's part of why I like the fact that this is a pod, is it's certainly not about fucking me giving advice to you, because my life's a car crash, or even having guests. Do you know what I mean?
But that means you've got experience.
But, well, most of it bad.
But that's the only good experience, is bad experience.
Well, yeah, I mean, you learn more from failure than you do success, don't you? But it's really for people to be able to listen, because I think we are told as men to talk all the time. But it's very hard to really listen and to feel heard. Mm. And actually that show was a really good example of that, because it's not like any of you offered up, you know, advice or this is what you should do. It was just an opportunity for someone to say, this is how I feel, this is why. And for three lads to go there, three mates to go, fuck man, we're here.
We had some.
That's it.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we had some, like, there were times when we were skiing along during the day, pulling, just talking about stuff.
Yeah.
Like, some of it was deep. A lot of it didn't make it in because it wasn't filmed. Some of it was funny, hilarious. You know, we'd get in. I remember the when Aldo had his, when his Achilles was obviously in a fucking shit state.
It was early on as well, wasn't it?
We're in this dirt. We got to this fucking shitty little log cabin. And he's like got his fucking boots off and you could see his Achilles. And I was like, fuck, you know, he's like, oh, we'll see how we do in the morning. Like, we were going to have a few hours kip in this wooden cat. It was fucking freezing. And I'm thinking, in my head, he's my best mate. I'm thinking, he'll be all right. He'll be all right. He'll be all right. And then the real part of me was like, he's fucked. And what does that do to the dynamic? Cause he's my best mate.
Yeah.
And how does that make me feel? Am I invested as much if he's gone? You know, I'm thinking. And anyway, we cracked on that morning. And then he was dropping back and back and back. And we had this discussion. He's like, lads, you're going to have to go. I'm accepting that. And then in that moment, I was like, I can't talk to him because I need to deal with this. So we had a discussion about this later and we're off. And I remember we were going down this massive, like they call them fire breaks, where they have like big chunks of wood missing in a forest to stop the fires raging. I remember looking back, it was about 2 kilometres of white snow and it's just there. And I'm like, that's it. I'm not going to see him again. Not on this. So I was like, I was trying to deal with that. And then, I don't know, a fucking few hours later, the fucking little weasel managed to, I don't know what happened, but it was like, it's funny because he caught up and he's like, you're a shit friend. I'm like, why? He's like, you didn't even talk to me when I was fucking cutting you off, mate. I had to fucking cut you off and deal with my own emotion.
Is that, I mean, in terms of like coping mechanisms, I think that a lot of us do that, you know, for him to come and say like shit friend, obviously he's like joking in
no,
a
no,
way.
No, there was
there's an element of.
He knew that I wasn't talking to him for a bit when it was at the point where he'd made the decision that we needed to leave, but he was still sort of there in the peripheries. And I don't know why. I felt bad for it. I was like, can't talk to him.
What was that decision for you?
It wasn't conscious.
Yeah.
I just knew after the event, I was like, I really sort of felt like I snubbed him there.
Yeah.
And then he come up later and was like, you fucking ignored me. And I was like, mate, I know, I feel bad. I'm sorry. I said, I don't know why. It wasn't a conscious thing, but I think now it's because I knew you'd told us to go. And I was like, if I'm going, it's like you're dead. I just got to leave that baggage behind.
It's amazing though, because even things like that, obviously it's a different environment, but even you having that conversation, or, you know, you're shipping, you feeling bad and saying sorry for that, is something that as blokes, we don't, I'm really guilty of this, is maybe not a part, or leaving something too long. Mm. So you fall out and then not discussing it, and not, and then it builds up such a period of time, or you don't speak to someone such a period of time, it then becomes awkward to get back in touch. Yeah. And have the conversation.
I think the military thing's good for that.
Yeah.
Because normally, back in the old days, if there was a problem, you just had a fight.
Yeah.
With your mates. Like, whether that's a fucking verbal fight.
I might start using that with Sam.
Yeah. Just knock him just out. Every case. You'll feel
been,
so much
I've been
better.
Waiting for an excuse.
Foxy told
no,
me.
No, I'm not. I'm not got a mate, problem.
Just let's
knock him out.
Old Lily back up. There, she's going to be having an absolute meltdown that I've just sanctioned banging someone out.
No, but like the overcoming kind of... Don't worry. Overcoming kind of conflict, but getting to the point and not leaving things, because time's got a way of fucking a lot of things. There's lots of people, even now that I have, you know, people that I've potentially fallen out with, that maybe not over the biggest things, but time now.
It makes it worse, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
And it's never too late to kind of pick up. I think this is something that I've certainly like learned, especially over the last couple of years, and it's part of me being a work in progress, is trying to change that stubborn element of my personality when it's having a negative impact on my life, you know?
It's quite a nice feeling when you rectify something.
It is.
Like, even that little thing, release, it was like, I don't know, half a day.
Well, yeah.
A day, whatever. And once you get it off your chest and you're like, yeah, I didn't mean it. I didn't even know. It wasn't even a conscious decision, but I'm sorry. And then he's like, well, I'm sorry for being fucking soft. And then, you know.
Are you proud of yourself?
In what way?
Are you proud of
I am,
who you are and where you are now?
Yeah, I am. I am proud of myself. I'm not proud of some things that I've done.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of it's conscious. I think a lot of it's misguided.
Hmm.
But I think all up generally, I'm proud of where I am, what I've got going on. And I'm proud of the fact that I want to keep being better. I'm not ever going to be the best, but I want to always think about how the day's been, how I could have improved. You know, I can still be a miserable bastard. I try not to be.
If you were going to go back, and this is a question I feel like everyone get kind of asked, you know, what would you tell your younger self?
No, it's one
of
them. Question.
But if you went back now, based on especially what you've kind of, you know, in the older years, and you've kind of realized I've been a dickhead at different points, and you're now trying to be a better person, and you're there opening up about mental health, what would you go back and tell yourself?
What would I do differently?
Yeah.
Because if I did anything differently, would I be where I'm at now?
Mm-hmm.
But put that to one side. Normally, I always say, if I could go back and speak to my 16-year-old self, I'd be like, mate, you're going to have a fucking great time. But life is hard. Like, you're not getting away from that. Whenever you feel negatively about something, go and talk. Go and find someone that you're comfortable to talk to. And don't be upset about speaking to someone and them not being the right person. Let that put you off. So that's what I normally say that. Actually, having spoken to you, I would elaborate on it.
Go back to 16. Don't do that podcast.
No, yeah. There's a thing, you'll come across a bloke called Pete Wicks later in life.
Fucking steer wide clear.
I would like to say to that person, before you're going to have opportunities in your life to make decisions that are decisions, you know, actions, because you're being offered things, you've got decisions to make with regard to life in general, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about the impact of those actions that you are going to take, whether it's voicing something, doing something, whatever. And think about the fact that it might actually, no, think a bit more than that. Think from other people's perspective. And if that action or saying words, parrot sentence, whatever, is going to have a negative impact on someone, think long and hard about whether you really want to do it.
Mate, as always, you're a superstar.
Mate, that was great.
So
mate,
I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
Last thing is, who do you prefer, me or Sam?
You.
Yeah, there we go. Click that up. Thanks for listening to Man Made. Make sure you rate, review, leave comments. We'd love to hear from you. Get involved in the conversation if you enjoyed it. If you didn't enjoy it, keep it to yourself. And we will be back next week.